This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Congress doesn't get HPC.
IBM says there's big value in big data.
Hello and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for July 19th, 2013, available Fridays on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, and filling in for Nicole Hemsoth, we have Isaac Lopez, the editor of Datanami. Isaac, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Addison. How are you doing today?
Good, and it's a good week to have you on again, as we've got a good story to talk about showing the linkage of the value for industry, especially between big data and research and high performance computing. But the big reason we need that is during the dedication of the Mira system, which is another IBM story. Senator Durbin was recorded saying that Congress just doesn't get HPC.
Yeah, that's right. My colleague Alex Woody wrote a story this week on HPC Wire based on those comments that Dick Durbin made about, you know, the U.S. Congress not getting supercomputers. His direct quote is, you know, they know the cost of supercomputers, but they don't know the value. And, of course, he went on to say that there needs to be some education done on members of Congress because he believes supercomputing is really the key to America's competitiveness in the world, you know, with breakthroughs that benefit the entire world. You know, Addison, this is something that you and Nicole have talked about extensively on this podcast. How does this get turned around?
Well, you know, I think education is a big deal in terms of showing the value, but in any case with research of all types, it winds up being a challenge showing what the direct value of research is, right? A lot of times you're doing research or science and you get challenged up front to say, well, what is it specifically that you're going to learn? And, you know, the Socratic method in science, you know, you put forward these hypotheses and you don't want to presume exactly what it is that you're going to learn. Nevertheless, you have a hypothesis that if we invest in more research and more science, that there's downstream benefits in engineering discovery, which, to Senator Durbin's point, is ultimately translates into industrial competitiveness and things like jobs.
Yeah, you know, we just had the top 500 last month come out, and, you know, the U.S. has five computers in the top 10. China has two, including the very top one. You think this pressure is going to maybe ratchet things up in Congress?
I think having other countries having top supercomputers absolutely does ratchet up the pressure because it simplifies everything down to the single score again. The article on HPC Wire today is wrapped around a Voice of America video that covers the dedication of Mira, and the Argonne National Lab director, Eric Isaacs, talks about the fact that when they first installed Mira, it was, you know, going to be the third most powerful computer in the world, and now it's fifth. And it's the nature of this industry that the competition is ongoing. There's a continuous leapfrogging at the top of the list. And you can talk about things like petascale or exascale, but really these are just mile markers along the way that you race past and then you keep going to the next one. And, you know, who reaches each mile marker might be arbitrary, but ultimately you need to look at which nations are leading the way in research here.
Indeed. So, I mean, I guess do we see any sort of immediate turnaround in the near future, or is this something that's going to be more of a decade-long project?
Well, you know, coincidentally, we just put out our new five-year forecast and total market model from 2012, showing the changes from 2011 and the forecast out to 2017. We've got a press release coming out on that this coming week. We're forecasting that the public sector does continue to lag behind in industry, where the commercial market does seem to intrinsically get the value of high-performance computing a little better than the government does right now, just in terms of value. And if you look at companies, they look strictly at, you know, profits, right? How does this help me make money? They're investing at a higher rate than government is right now. Industry-wide, we're looking at a forecast growth rate of 6.5% over the next 5 years, but government is lagging behind that, where we're looking at 3.4% growth for national research labs, 4.7% growth for national security. Academia, of course, has a flatter growth rate because a lot of that gets downstream of the government funding, where you look at how grants work. So the entire public sector worldwide is still behind industry.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of work to be done then.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's work to be done. The good news is I think it'll catch up. The budget cycles, I think, will start loosening. It had been extremely flat over the last couple of years, and we look at how many sites report declining budgets versus increasing budgets, and the amount of sites expecting declining budgets on the government side is in itself a declining number. So we should see that starting to catch up. Now, what Senator Durbin says is in his comments is we really need to understand what's the value of these systems if we're going to keep investing in them. I was talking a lot about government investment in high-performance computing and what we need to do in order to demonstrate the value of that. On the commercial side, where it's been a little more evident, IBM is actually doing quite a bit to not only bring value into the discussion, but talk about the linkage between value of HPC research and big data.
Yeah, so we had a great article last week by a contributor from IBM Canada, Dominic Lamb. And in his article, he focused on the interplay between research, big data, and HPC, and the trends that have emerged around them, including trends in the research funding. And, you know, Dr. Lamb makes a point that, you know, big data is nothing new to the high-performance computing-oriented research community. You know, you got these big, lofty projects like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, you know, the work that's being done at CANFAR with, you know, a 1.2 petabyte database with observation data spanning the entire electromagnetic spectrum. You know, and he points to these grand kind of subatomic and cosmological types of systems and notes that there's sort of a shift happening as research is beginning to evolve its focus into what he calls sort of daily life systems, you know, things like weather forecasting and power and grid stability, stock trending and portfolio optimization. And, you know, his point is that, you know, the trend that's developing in government research funding, at least in Canada, where, you know, the agency there is responsible for funding the Science, Technology, and Innovation Council, he says they have a mandate to, and here's the quote, provide the government of Canada with evidence-based science and technology advice on issues critical to Canada's economic development and Canada's social well-being. Meaning, you know, these guys want to see a more direct sort of, as he says, daily life impact in both economics and social issues.
Well, and this is exactly the point we were just discussing, is we need to show what is the linkage here. If we make this investment, if we build out these systems, how does that affect people's lives? How does it affect national competitiveness? How does it affect things like profitability and jobs, quality of life, et cetera?
Exactly. And one of the great examples that he pointed out is something that we covered about a month ago, work being done by Dr. Carolyn McGregor at the Ontario Institute of Technology, where they're using real-time data to monitor, you know, every breath, the heartbeat, blood oxygen levels, you name it, of premature infants. And they're using real-time analytics to determine if something needs to be done now to prevent problems later. And he's saying that, you know, Dr. Lamb is saying that, research funding is going to move more in these directions, these sort of real-time systems that have daily life impact, and away from these more subatomic, cosmological sort of projects. I wonder if you agree with that, if that may be something that would be happening in the U.S.
Well, I mean, neonatal care is something that's common to any country, and I think if you get into saying, here's some babies' lives that we're going to save, you know, that's where you get to some real value. I mean, if you say, here's research that we can do to improve quality of life in exactly the following ways, I think the bigger point here is that they're talking about getting to this through what they're calling their data-centric research computing architecture, or DCRC. You also hear them talk about data-centric distributed computing. And what I like about this is it's got as much of the emphasis or even more on the flow of data and the connectedness of data as it does to how much computation we're doing. When you get into measuring supercomputers exclusively in terms of flops, you sort of lose what's the connectedness and relationship to the data, and it may be abstracted to a level that doesn't show the value as much. When you start from the premise of talking about here are these networks of data that we need better understanding of and we can help get there, that's where I think that it's a shorter walk to describe what the value of analyzing that data is.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, he says that the HPC community has a big role to play in this sort of evolution, in that there's a lot of challenges around the systems and the integration and, you know, and all of the array of challenges he has. But he says that, you know, these dynamics are kind of creating an evolution in HPC services where centers consolidate. You know, there may be fewer, quote-unquote, HPC opportunities and more, you know, sort of big data analyst opportunities.
Well, and your little verbal air quotes there, the quote-unquote HPC opportunities, are really important because they are HPC opportunities. They're just not opportunities that people might think of calling them high-performance computing because you're thinking of them as analytics or even some other type of research. But the point is that the high-performance computing technologies all have a very direct role, not just the processing, but the interconnects, the data structures. All of these things are technologies that are coming out of the HPC industry. And even on the vendor side, you might think of it as, hey, I sold a supercomputer, but the conversation of engagement around that with the funders, with the buyers, is not necessarily an HPC conversation where you say, you know, you're going to need this many teraflops in order to solve this problem. It's not really like that. It's more about how can I build an architecture that's going to help you gain insight from the data that you have available.
So that kind of leads to the question then, does it make more sense for investment to go towards these sort of, you know, 33.8 petaflop systems, or to add more investment in the sort of general HPC that can solve these daily life systems? And I think that this is sort of a question that Congress is faced with.
Well, you don't want to stop chasing flops. I mean, you do need the top 500 list in terms of showing that we need to get to new levels of scale to be able to push technologies to new categories of problems. However, when you talk about exascale, what I like is that we're using the term exascale as opposed to exaflop. What you don't want is just flops for flop's sake, and you have a big dump truck full of flops that dumps a pile of flops onto something. You need to know what it is that you're trying to apply it to. And can you build an architecture that makes sense according to the type of problem that you're trying to solve? Another type of benchmark to go along with LINPACK might be appropriate, some other way to measure systems that are designed for applications that are not well aligned to the large parallel matrix multiplication that do test other aspects of an interconnect or a memory architecture or a data architecture. You don't want to get into just the macho flopism of, if I have more flops than you, then that means my computer is better for my problem than yours is for your problem.
So that discussion has been in supercomputing for as long as I have been in it, the last decade. So I wonder what will ever kind of change that dynamic.
Yeah, and this is a serious conversation that we've had with a couple of people at the national labs in terms of, and even with the founders of the top 500 list. And you do see people trying other types of lists like the Graph 500 and like the Green 500 that haven't got the full traction yet of the top 500 list. Ultimately, what's good about those lists is that you do have to try to boil it down to a single score that's as easy to understand as flops are, or a ranking 1, 2, 3, so that you get people excited about it. But, you know, even the going back to the video that we were talking about before with the dedication of Mira, you know, they're talking about measuring these systems in flops, and the number one supercomputer in the world is the Milky Way 2 at Guangzhou, and you're measuring that in flops. We might need to find some other simple ways to build more of these metrics into that discussion.
I agree, Addison. I think it's just a matter of time and effort out there.
Well, it's why we're out there fighting the good fight, and I appreciate you writing up stories like these so we can keep demonstrating this value. That'll wrap it up this week. I'm glad that you were with me on the program again this week, Isaac. I look forward to talking to you again on a future podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you again later, Isaac. Thanks.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.